This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us by phone this morning is Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami. Welcome, Derek.
Hey, good morning, Catherine. Good morning, everybody that's listening. Thank you for tuning in.
Thanks so much for carving time out. How's the view now that you're in that top job there?
You know, I love it, Catherine. It still feels like it's a dream, and waiting to wake up. It's been fantastic. I've been able to surround myself with very smart people, dedicated and loyal people who have the best interest of Kauai and her people at heart. And so I've been blessed. What can I say?
Well, is there anything that maybe has surprised you about the job now that you've been in the post for 2 months?
Yes, there's been many things that have been surprising. One of the things that I noticed is we've been going out to every department and slowly trying to reach every single base yard. It is going to take some time because we're also prepping for budget. But we've been able to identify some very hardworking associates that just absolutely love what they do. They inspire me. We've been able to identify certain process and procedures that we can improve on. But I think the biggest surprise to me has just been how quickly the day can go by.
Well, you know, we did mention that last week you were here on Oahu. You appeared before the Legislative Money Committees. We were at that hearing. Let's take a listen to your pitch.
We have 1 in 8 homes on Kauai is a vacation rental. So you talk about the lack of affordable housing, the ability for us as a county to provide very basic necessities, a roof over people's heads, keep our kids home. When you have 1 in 8 homes, that's a vacation rental. It erodes our ability to do that. And we have a number of illegal vacation rentals. So we're asking the legislature very humbly, again, to take a look at amortization language so that some of these vacation rentals that are operating outside of the VDA, should they transfer ownership, we have the ability to evaporate that use when it changes ownership. It is a privilege. It's a privilege to operate a vacation rental in our neighborhoods. Our communities need to be able to take our neighborhoods back.
So what was the reception that you got after that plea?
You know, I think it was an eye-opener. You know, we've had a number of bills in front of the legislature that our planning departments have been testifying in support of. Of course, you do know that our hardworking representatives and senators are oftentimes pulled in a million and one ways. And so it was received, I think, with a reality check. You're having a mayor now come in front of you to really spell out what we're being dealt with. We have a number of vacation rentals that are in our neighborhoods. Some have been grandfathered in, in my opinion, it should run with ownership. And so, if somebody were to sell their property, that's one way where we can start recovering our neighborhoods. The other thing that we need is we need to have the legislature perhaps begin the conversation of having these type of appeals go straight to court. Right now, what's happening is we are notifying these illegal vacation rental operators to cease and desist. We are imposing fines. They come and appeal, and the way that they appeal is they go through our planning commission. We have to have a hearings officer. You know, that commission is volunteers, so they don't meet regularly, and it's expensive to hire a hearings officer. And so these cases get dragged out for years at times. It's a huge cost to our taxpayers. If we can have these type of cases go straight to court, have a judge and jury rule on it, impose those fines, that's one way where we can address the backlog and the frustration from our people, Catherine. People are frustrated because they know that these operations are illegal, yet they continue to operate while they're being dragged out through the appeal process. And so these are things that the legislature can give the counties and partner with us so that we can finally address something that is a problem on each and every island. This is not just a Kauai issue. This is an issue statewide.
Right, and we did just see a report, the survey from the Hawaii Tourism Authority about how residents feel about tourism. And it's more negative than it used to be.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Everything comes with a price, and what we're striving to do is to strike the right balance. I would like to note that, you know, the vacation rentals that are operating legitimately, they are paying into their fair share of infrastructure. You know, they are providing jobs. We do see the value. We are specifically looking at people that are operating illegally. As far as Kauai, you know, Kauai Visitors Bureau and their working group just came out with a tourism strategic plan. And basically what the visitor industry is saying is that we are at capacity. Like, if we stay status quo, that'll be good. They are finally addressing that we may have too many visitors that have put a strain on our infrastructure and our public resources.
Right, and that report says that the average count per day is like 25,000, and that number has been really exceeded in recent years.
Yes, it has, and part of the reason why is the number of vacation rentals that have proliferated throughout our community.
So you're just saying, enough already, cap it.
Well, it's hard to cap things, and here's why, Catherine. There's a number of things that are really out of our wheelhouse, and we continue to strive to open those lines of communication, but really, we can't control how many flights land on Kauai. And so there's a big communication gap between the visitor industry, the counties, the state and federal government. We got to tell them, like, this is the number of rooms that we have available. This is our capacity. And that conversation has not happened. And it needs to before we get into a situation where we're just, I mean, the people are already frustrated. And we're trying to avoid having this type of situation boil over into something that's even uglier.
I know here on Oahu, we have a number of areas that are just loved to death, just sheer number of tourists and visitors that stop by every day. And I know, I believe the Park Service has an issue with Haleakala. What there on Kauai is stressed?
What area on Kauai is stressed? Everywhere. Everywhere. As I can name a few, Koke'e. You know, before the disasters in April, Haena, Wainiha, they were overstressed. Right now, you know, I'm a surfer. During the busy times, if I only have an hour to go surf at Waialae and I can't find the parking and I'm driving around for 30 minutes, you know, that's eroding at my quality of life. Really, we are over capacity as far as what our island can handle. And that's why we're really working with the state on their Haena State Master Plan. You know, when those floods hit, we hit that reset button and we say, okay, once we return to normalcy, how do we address the big gorilla in the room, which is the impact of the visitor industry on these little towns? And so we are setting a capacity out there. You make a reservation. There's a certain amount of parking stalls. If you want to come see some of our most beautiful places, you come in by shuttle. And really, we're at a point where we have to have the conversation. Do we impose fees on some of these very special places, our Wahipana? And my opinion is we should. We absolutely should have a fee for people to come and visit. We want people to visit, but there's a cost associated with it. And, you know, when I'm traveling with my wife, Monica, my daughter, Haley, my son, Christopher, and we go to places like Yellowstone, we're more than happy, and we expect to pay. And we're at a point where I think we have to have the conversation and really take a look at managing our resources wisely.
So really those floods have put the pause button on and given us an opportunity to say, hey, we need to let the resource recover and figure out a plan to manage.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Now, as far as the TAT, while we can't cap tourism, I know you folks are asking, the counties are asking that we remove the cap on the counties, on what the counties receive every year.
Yes, we are. We're asking them to go back to the original intent. And you know what's funny, Catherine, I'll go have somebody take a look and look up Uncle Richard's opening statement when he was Speaker of the House. I'll have somebody find that, and I'll read you what the intent was way back in the 80s. But when we capped the TAT, I was the president of the Hawaii State Association of Counties. The legislature was originally considering to just take all of the TAT. That was the original plan. You got to remember, the state was in dire need. Teachers were getting furloughed. Services were getting cut. So they were in a desperate situation. And we were able to say, okay, you know what? Give us something that's predictable. So they capped it. So they capped the TAT. And the original intent was to be able to navigate through that Great Recession and then remove that cap and return it back to status quo. That has never happened. I don't think it will perhaps ever happen. I do know that the governor has a proposal that appropriates a percent to the counties. That does have some risk, but it also has some reward as well. I do know that Chair Luke has a measure that will allow the counties to impose a TAT tax at the county level, and that also poses some benefits for the counties as far as our ability to control our own destiny. And really, Catherine, that's really why Kauai County did a very brave brave thing by taking the 0.5% GE surcharge during an election year. Now, during an election year, we took a look at the budget. We took a look at everything that was on the horizon as far as what we could be receiving from the state. And we really made the unpopular decision, which was the right decision, to say, hey, we're going to take that 0.5% GE surcharge. This is a tax that's earmarked specifically for public transportation, specifically for infrastructure repair. And it's a good tax because that's the kind of tax that fixes infrastructure and keeps people working.
Now, I know that this is all really tied in. You know, you talk about all the homes that are vacation rentals, you know, the situation with our affordable housing crisis, our homeless crisis. You know, it's all connected.
Yes, it is all one part of a complex issue that takes complex thinking to really unravel it.
And I know the concern people have is that for years we're just leaving so much money that is uncollected on a lot of these booking platforms. And I believe tomorrow the Airbnb tax case goes into court. So we'll have to see what happens on that end. But anything else that you think you'd want to share or stress when it comes to, you know, removing the TAT and finding a way to be able to provide more housing for the residents?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the things that we've been able to identify is that Kauai and the state of Hawaii in general, we have a tremendous amount of asset as far as land. And so we are, during the first 100 days of being in office, we are taking a look at our inventory of county properties, state properties. We've identified a number that are within our urban core with existing infrastructure. If we can get into a long-term lease negotiation, say, for example, a 65-year lease negotiation with a developer and tell them, look, we'll take the cost of the land and infrastructure out of this project. Here are the price points that we're trying to reach. We'll get into a 65-year lease agreement so that you and your investors can get a return on investment. Then we can provide that affordable rental units that we so much need, and we get to own the land and the property as well. So to me, it's a win-win. It's a public-private partnership. It's utilizing our own assets because, quite frankly, I'm tired of waiting for large landowners to come to the table, and I'm tired of waiting for private developers to figure out when the market is right to provide the housing that we need. So we just want to move forward. You know, there are certain parks that we have that no one is using. No one is utilizing it except for people that are hanging out doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Those are the type of assets that I'd like to move on to provide the housing that we so much greatly need.
Now, I know in your testimony before the money committees last week, you also talked about the Ohana zones, and that you thought that one of the best places, I think, in Lihue was the Pualoke Arboretum. Is that right?
Yeah, Pualoke. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're trying to work we're trying to work with the state on this. We're trying to collaborate with DLNR. And I tell you why it's key. When you talk about Ohana zones, where it doesn't work is when you put those Ohana zones out of sight and out of mind. You cannot do that. Ohana zones need to be next to areas where there's public transportation. Ohana zones need to be in areas where families can receive services. And Ohana zones need to be near areas where there's jobs available. And that particular location is located right across of our county homeless shelter. It's being operated by KEO, so literally a stone's throw. Like, I mean, you could throw a stone and land in the parking lot of KEO. Is our current homeless shelter that has services. We have adult mental health and psychologists and psychiatrists that are located nearby at Kukui Grove. You have a number of retail job opportunities at the shopping center. Right now, that park, which we used to use, you know, that park is literally in my backyard. I grew up in Ulumahi, which is a stone's throw away from that park. The only people utilizing that park right now are homeless people. And so it makes complete sense for us when you take a look at all of the factors that would have to fall into place to have something work. That would be the right place because right across of that potential Ohana zone is a base yard that's owned by the county that we're moving to develop into affordable housing. And it's going to be a transit-oriented development because there will be public transportation located nearby. And the reason why transportation and having it nearby is so important is because transportation is a social justice issue. You know, I have numerous people, a majority of people don't use our bus system. So they ask me, why should we be subsidizing public transportation? Well, I tell them, this is the reason why. We're an island that doesn't leave anybody behind. And when you talk to single moms or you talk to families that are really trying to do the best that they can, stay employed, get a job, there are two big, huge barriers that stand in their way. For single moms, it's childcare. For single moms and for families, just the ability to get to and from work on time is another huge barrier. And that's why all of these components would need to fall in place. And I'm hoping that the state can work with us to see that the bigger value of that piece of property is to house our local families. We have so much open space where we can have an arboretum. We have so much other places that we can maintain for that type of purpose. But when you talk about putting people as a top priority, that parcel would be so important to all of us.
Okay, well, if you're just joining us, this is The Conversation, and we're focusing on the Garden Isle, and we're talking with Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami. Have a question or a concern, reach out and join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Well, Mayor, can you tell us, I mean, is there opposition to using this property there in Lihue?
Oh, I'm pretty sure there's going to be some opposition. Usually, Catherine, you know, people that are going to be living close by to the area are generally going to oppose. You know, we've had people oppose, you know, having a park next door because they didn't want to have children and the sound of laughter and kids playing disrupt their peace. We're trying to site a landfill. I can tell you, no matter what it is, people are going to oppose. But let me tell you, when I have to weigh out what's the best for the greater good of the community at large, I'm going to have to make these very tough decisions. Now, we have to remember that most of the time, the right decisions are not popular. Even within my own household, if I have to make a tough decision, usually the people in my household, my wife, my kids, are not happy. But it's because it's the right thing to do for the right reasons. I'm not sure if we can negotiate a deal with the state. I'm very optimistic that we can trade off or find ways to compensate them if that's what it takes. But really, for our agenda, which is based on compassion, which is based on humility, and that's why we're also creating the Office of Human Concerns, Catherine, we are taking a look at where we have gaps in the system, where we need to improve. And I really want to stop the finger pointing. When we talk about homelessness, mental health issues, drug addiction, substance abuse, all of the social challenges that we face these are a lot of times state issues. And I'm tired of people saying, no, that's a state issue, that's a county issue. Look, this is our backyard. If it's happening at home, it's my issue. And so we want to erase those lines in the sand and just say, if there's a way, because we have a bigger presence on island, because we have the boots on the ground, if there's a way that the county can provide assistance to fill those gaps, we're gonna address it head on. You know, for me, it's a personal issue. My own family has been dealing with mental health issues. My older brother that I miss every single day had committed suicide because he couldn't find the help that he needed. And so it's a personal crusade for me. I'm just hoping that we can pull this deal off.
And what's been the feedback from the county council?
You know, when we poll county council members individually, to the ones that we have, they're very open to the idea. Every single council member is cognizant that we have a homeless crisis on Kauai. They're very aware that we have a housing issue. We need to have 9,000 homes, you know, in 30 years. And at the rate that we're deploying housing, we're going to be far, far behind. And that's why we're taking a look at these very innovative and creative measures, you know, because, you know, the old way wasn't working. And it's on us, right, to find that new way.
Okay, I believe we've got a call on the line.
Sure.
Ollie, are you there?
Yes. Yes. Hi. How are you guys today?
Good. You have a question?
Actually, I just have a comment. I first of all want to say thank you so much for the discussion that you're having. Two of your very important points. One about over tourism. I'm very excited. I believe you're hosting a event, a public square, towards the end of February about over tourism, and I just want to express a deep gratitude for having that discussion, because it's a discussion we've needed to have for a long time, especially for the Outer Islands and all our very critical space that's being overrun, and our resources is very important. I believe it's a world discussion, actually, over tourism. And also want to thank the mayor.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank him for having the discussion and recognizing the importance of single mothers and transportation, and having extremely vital conversation about using the land now to make housing available, and not just it being political, but just actually developing sustainably, intelligently, as soon as possible. So we can all work together and solve these problems and just be creative, because we live in the most amazing time right now of emerging technologies and innovations, and we can all work together. And I'm really excited about your leadership for Kauai. I was raised there, and I'm so excited for some of your proposals, and I hope that everybody gets on board and supports, and we all work together. Thank you so much. Aloha.
Thank you very much for the honor of allowing me to serve this community. You know, Catherine, and to the listeners out there, you know, I just returned from the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Washington, D.C. I got to meet some fabulous people. I got to meet mayors from sea to shining sea, big city mayors, mayors of little towns, and we were at a reception, and I turned to my wife, and I looked around, and I took her by the arm, and I said, you know, we are so blessed, because in this whole room, I might possibly be the luckiest mayor, like, in the nation, if not the world, and I'm serious about it. We have the most beautiful island. Everybody wants to come here. You know, it's a blessing and a curse. Like, everybody wants to have a piece of Kauai, and I get to serve this island. I get to serve and be a servant for the most beautiful people, people that when there's adversity, you know, when we have highways that get landslides and people are cut off, you have people from Ke Kaha rushing to the aid. We have people coming together, dedicating their time, fixing things on their own. And what, I mean, how lucky is that? Like, I'm the most stoked mayor in the world right now. And it's people like this that just really, really brightened my day. So thank you very much.
Okay, we have another call coming in, this time from the Big Island. Andy from Puna, do you have a question or a comment?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, my name's Andy. I live in the Puna district. My comment to the mayor is I'm just flabbergasted at his bravery. You're addressing issues that are so fraught with institutional backlog and people who are dug in of the ways things should be, and your comment about the complexity of it was so on the mark, because there's a tendency I find here in at least on Hawaii Island to not really want to confront the change and the situation. So my question to you is, how do you push through that? You must just get constant roadblocks thrown in your way for some of the things you're wanting to, for some of the changes you're wanting to move forward. So, and I'll take your answers off the air, but again, fabulous jobs it sounds like you're doing.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, caller, all the way from Puna. Our hearts are with you. We know that you've gone through extreme adversity as well, and, you know, we continue to pray and lend our support. You know, Mayor Kim out there is fighting hard for you folks. You know, the Hawaii, all of the Hawaii mayors came together to support Mayor Kim. We stand united in your recovery as well. You know, I got to tell you, it's been a long time since this island has allowed a person from the private sector. You know, I'm a businessman. Our family owned and operated Big Saves. I worked in the grocery store. I come from the grocery business. I'm 41 years old. This island is giving our generation a chance to lead. And so we come in with that attitude that we cannot fail, because if we fail, nobody will allow our generation a chance again. That's how much pressure we have on our shoulders. And I tell you, they'll say, see, we told you he was too young. See, we told you he was too inexperienced. So we get through that by leading by example. You know, I came in and set the tone with all of our department heads to say, hey, we are going to be a customer service-oriented organization. When you guys are going through budget and you guys are asking for equipment, I'm out there telling them that, you know, we are blessed to have these equipment paid for by the people of Kauai. This is not our vehicles. These are not our lawnmowers. These are owned by people that are working two or three jobs. Remember that. And it's a blessing and a privilege to get to work. Not this attitude, oh, we have to go to work. No, you get to work in this organization. You get to be a part of this team. We have high expectations. We tell people we have tremendous benefits that other people don't have. We've got 21 days of sick leave, 21 days of vacation. You got job security, and we're a public servant. To be a servant, there's no more noble calling than to be a servant of the people. And so it's about changing the culture. It's about leading from the top and leading by example. I ask people, if you're wondering how you should treat customers, then it's very easy. It's by the way that I treat you. And so we get out there and we're trying to touch every single one of our associates. We're trying to remind them who it is that we serve. And of course, we're going to get pushback. But, you know, these type of challenges, it's really what I love to do. I mean, I've always been one of those guys that takes a look at a challenge, a complex problem, get the very best and brightest people, some within government, some we're reaching to the private sector, and bring them to the table and say, look, we have a complex problem. Let's solve this. You know, we have a way of prioritizing what's the low-hanging fruit. Take, for example, my first day on the job, I went down to motor vehicle registration, and they have a line that's notoriously long. I wanted to, one, identify the process and procedure. Okay, so one, I can't shorten the wait time because, one, we're severely understaffed. Those clerks that are working behind those desks, there are hammering away as fast as they can, but we're shorthanded because we can't pay them enough. Like, the level of complexity that that job requires and the skill level that they have, they should be getting paid, in my opinion, twice as much. It's that complicated. So we can't recruit workers. We're tied into a system that's based in with the city and county of Honolulu, so that system has added time to our process. So, yes, I identify I can't shorten the wait time. But here's the thing. We had a lady say, you know, I'm, you know, 70-something years old. I've been standing up for 2 hours. Okay, so, you know, this is where the compassion comes in. So, okay, I can't change how long we wait. I want to change how you wait. And so we implemented right off the bat a take-a-number system. We removed the lines. We put out a whole bunch of seats. We have RSVP volunteers, elder volunteers working as concierge, asking people, what are you here for? Oh, you want to go to that window? People are now sitting down comfortably. Even if they got to wait, we're changing the way that they wait. I also did that because, you know, as a cashier in that grocery store, I used to dread Paohana time. When people were getting off work, because that's where we had the longest line, and people just wanted to get their beer and poke and go home, so they were not happy. And that put a lot of pressure on me as a cashier. So I could only imagine our poor clerks that are stuck with a line all day long with people tapping their toes, very frustrated. So I said, look, I want to remove that presence away from the counter. So one, it creates a better work environment for our associates, a better customer experience for our customers. And really what I'm trying to do is, because I'm having a hard time recruiting and retaining, because I'm limited by the amount that we can pay, you know, as a grocery store, we could never compete against the visitor industry. But what we did is we created a happy work environment.
Okay,
we gave our associates a sense of purpose. And so one of our goals is to compete with the private sector and have the county of Kauai be one of the happiest places to work.
Well, this is
that's a long answer to a short question, but I'm passionate about this stuff.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Today we're talking with Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami. He's available to answer your concerns and questions. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Reggie Padilla may be the only saxophonist to surf and play the sax at the same time. On February 9th, Reggie surfs the Atherton Studio stage with a program of jazz and pop standards and all original compositions he's creating just for this evening. Reserve your seats now at hprtickets.org. Station members enjoy discounted pricing. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
When Wilson met his first grade teacher, she asked him an innocent question.
What'd you do this summer?
But Wilson didn't have an easy answer because last summer, he'd been separated from his mom at the border.
Well, I am glad you're here.
Life after family separation. Next time on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
This evening at 7.
Well, Mayor, we know you folks are doing some interesting things with green energy there and sustainability, and I know great hope when there were plans announced for a dairy there on Kauai, because we've seen the number of dairies just dwindle here in the state. And with this whole idea of sustainability, some folks were hoping that we would have a new dairy established. But there was this news, you know, last week that Olupono has decided to basically cut those plans, you know, after an 8-year go at it because of environmental concerns. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm very sad. You know, it became apparent that the location wasn't the ideal location. I can agree with that, okay? If the location is not the ideal location, then let's find some place where it is ideal, where we can have our own control of our food systems. And there's different ways we can do it. We've always supported agriculture. You know, my mom grew up farming in Hulia Valley. And, you know, this proposed dairy, you know, it was really, right off the start, because of the location, they were crippled from the very beginning. And once you get that type of opposition, there's no reasoning with the opposition, because they've already got it set in their mind that this is a terrible thing. Now, most of them, however, did say that, yes, if it was someplace more mauka, that wasn't so close to a stream that led out to one of the most pristine coastlines in the world, yeah, it could happen. But for whatever which reason, I'm not sure if Ulupono did not want to look for another location. Certainly, we have a large amount of fallow agricultural land that we're trying to get farmers onto. But yeah, it was sad. You know, we have to be supportive of agriculture. If we don't give farmers and that next generation of farmers the ability to have a thriving ag industry, one, you know, we're going to be stuck importing our food. And what happens when we have a disaster at our ports, or what happens when we have dock workers go on strike? You know, we are pretty much dependent on those systems to make sure that we get food that lands on our plate. And, you know, things have become so convenient over time, most people don't even think where that food came from and how hard it was to produce that meal. You know, we got to be thankful. And so it was sad. I wish that we could have found a compromise location where they could operate. I can't imagine the feeling that it gives people that are out there toiling every day when they see communities come back and not support ag, because really it's a labor of love, and we got to support those that are growing our food.
Now, there were environmental concerns, and I believe it was the Surfrider Foundation, I think, that initially looked at the issue of the bacterial counts that were coming down there into the bay. But I think it raised a larger question about cesspools and injection wells and whether we're doing enough to keep those pristine areas safe and clean.
Yeah, you know, that was a thing. And I'd like to really thank the Surfrider Foundation for their work. As a surfer myself, I surely like to know that the water I'm surfing in is clean. And but you're right. You know, they were pointing out the levels of pollution in that area. And, you know, the source of pollution, in my opinion, is exactly that, the large amount of cesspools, injection wells, archaic systems that used to work, perhaps, when we had 16,000 people on the island, but they're surely not working now. As far as septic systems, that is not also the ideal way to treat human waste. As far as our ability to deploy more county and municipal sewer systems, we're trying to make the case to the legislature to allow the counties like Kauai to use some of that GE surcharge for infrastructure such as wastewater, because right now we're only allowed to use it for roads and transportation. Now, roads and the conditions of our roads, they are very important because, one, it's a public safety issue. But I'm more concerned about what's under our roads and the deferred maintenance on our water systems, not having that type of sewer system to treat larger communities. And so we're pondering different financing schemes. One of the things that I thought about is on-bill financing. So if we can't deploy a sewer system in your neighborhood and you were financially burdened and not able to convert from a cesspool to an individual wastewater treatment facility, what we could do is ease the cost factor by amortizing that cost over 30 years, perhaps, on your water bill, so that you're not stuck with a $20,000 or $30,000 bill right up front. We could take that cost and spread it out and sort of amortize it. Similarly to how we handle our solid waste, we provide the collection bins. Every month you get a charge depending on how many bins you have. And so you don't see that huge upfront cost. You just see it over a matter of years, because eventually, Catherine, we are eventually going to have to convert over. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. When it starts jeopardizing our ocean, when it starts jeopardizing our aquifers and drinking water, is going to lead to some of these desperate measures that need to be addressed.
We do have another call coming in from Kauai Stan. But before we get to that call, Mayor, I know in talking with Mayor Bernard Carvalho, when you had the floods, there was also the concern about what do we do about those homes that were destroyed. And I know the thinking was, well, they need to, get up to speed and switch over from cesspools to another system. You can't just rebuild as is. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they do. And you know what? Most of those homes that got affected can afford to do it. I mean, you know, these are homes that are, you know, beachfront property in Hanalei. So there's no excuse. And, you know, we're going to come to a point, and we got to go work with the realtors and, you know, really address this thing. You know, the realtors here, they live here. They care about this island. Seriously, we got to say, you know, if you're going to sell a home and it's on a cesspool or on a system that's not, you know, to our standard of what's acceptable, then you got to convert. You know, that's the way the transaction is going to be. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you got to force the hand.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's a top priority. Like I said, that ocean is my playground. We got to preserve it for future generations. And those are going to be some unpopular decisions that are probably not going to be too popular with those people that, you know, are going to be affected. But it is what it is. We got to have the conversation.
Okay. Now, Stan, Kong Kwai, I know you've been very patient. What's on your mind?
From my heart, I have to say aloha to Governor Kawakami, I mean Mayor Kawakami, and I just want you to know you have a lot of support. I have friends tell me, before I can tell you that I met you and how nice you are, people love you and want to help. So number one, what can the community do to help you reach your goals? What can each individual do on the island to set an example for the rest of the state so you can be the next governor by example what you do here? And how can we build our next foster children's emergency shelter, because Hawaii still doesn't have one, the only county? And the last thing is, how can we get all the multi-billion-dollar online travel monopoly companies? Thank you for getting Airbnb, but how can we get them to pay taxes and GE tax to support our counties? And I'll listen off the air, and your dad would be proud of you, sir.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Stan. That might be Stan Wolshin, just by the sound of his voice. If it is, what's up, Stan? Thank you for remembering my dad. If there was one thing that I wish I could have, is I wish my mom and my dad were here. They would have loved this. They've been waiting for this. And I miss them every single day. You know, if people want to get involved, and this is a beautiful thing about Kauai, one of the best things they can do is go find somewhere where they can volunteer. I mean, there's so much help that we need. One of the things that I would like to see is our ability to get organizations to have a day at work at our parks. You know, our parks, we got so much of them. Our workers out there are struggling to keep up. They're doing the best that they can. If I can get groups to come out on one weekend to do a service project, it would do wonders, and I tell you why. When you get the community to take ownership in their parks and their facilities, it's less likely to get vandalized. When we start showing that imagery of these big uncles, right, that are well-respected in the community out there painting our facilities, those young punks that are out there vandalizing things are less likely to go mess with it because they know who they're going to have to answer to. And that's just the way that things roll here on Kauai. We take ownership of our neighborhoods. So that'd be one great way for people to participate. The other thing is, let us know what you're thinking. You know, from time to time, when I get a break, I go down to Kapolei building and I go talk to our customers. That's where we hear our concerns. Let your county council know what you think about the proposals that are out there. I need our people to be actively involved. I need the majority to let us know what they're thinking. Because oftentimes what we hear is the minority, and it can be confusing, you know? So we need to see where the majority of people on this island feel about our initiatives and feel comfortable that they can speak freely without fear and intimidation. You know, that's one thing. As far as the second question, you know, hold on. Alden, I can't read your handwriting. What does that say? Sorry, Catherine. I got my good friend Alden.
Well,
foster children, a foster care center for our keiki. You know, we're starting that. We are nearing the completion of our adolescent youth treatment and healing facility up in Kalepa. You know, so we are currently investing and constructing in a healing center for our youth so they don't have to be shipped out, so that we can heal them. And not only them, we got to heal families. Because once that youth comes out, they're going to go home, and that home needs to be structurally sound and ready to receive that child. And so that's one of the things that we're addressing through our newly formed proposed Office of Human Concerns. As far as Airbnb and those companies paying taxes. You know, we're just asking those companies, if they're going to operate in our neighborhood, to be respectful. And right now, quite frankly, it could be questionable if they've been respecting us as to the level that they should. Some of these platforms, and I'm not going to name them individually, but some of these platforms are designed to hide the physical address of vacation rentals that are operating illegally. Some of these operators are going in when they know that our planning department is not working and advertising after hours, and we have dedicated associates at home taking a look and identifying these areas. And so what we're doing is we're taking a look at technology, third-party software companies that are designed to flush those addresses that they're trying to hide to the surface so that we can go out and enforce. I'm not sure if you heard, but we just doled out a $130,000 fine to an operator that blatantly disregarded our laws, blatantly disrespected our community. And the message is this. If you're operating an illegal vacation rental, if you're impacting our neighborhoods and being disrespectful, the time to cease and desist is now, because we're coming, and we're going to be dropping a big hammer on this. It's gone on far too long. Neighborhoods have been lost. People are getting taxed out of their homes because of the increased property values that these illegal operations have posed on people that are living on fixed incomes. And quite frankly, I'm appalled and I'm offended by it. So I hope that answers your question, Stan.
And Mayor, we have another call coming in from Kona. Brian, do you have a question for the mayor?
Hi, I'm on the air.
Yes.
Okay, I'll be careful what I say. Just kidding. Hey, listen, like I told the person that took my phone call, I was listening kind of half-heartedly. I have HPR on frequently, and I'm working here in the Kona area, where somebody I'm working for provided a place for me to stay, which is important because I've been homeless for most of the past 20 years, but I'm not calling up to elicit sympathy. I'm beyond that. But I heard this young man, 40 years old, and I can say that because I'm 59, and I was immediately impressed because he's speaking from a place where obviously he has experience and he has perspective that a lot of people who call themselves leaders or others call leaders just simply don't have. And the one word that comes to my mind is humility. And I don't want to start crying, but it's like I've been touched by some people whose lives here on the Big Island. So the only real kahuna that I've ever met, his name is Uncle Robert, and he's no longer with us. But this young man, who I guess turns out to be a mayor of Kauai, reminds me a lot of Uncle Robert. And I can't say that about very many people because, like I said, I've gotten around. I never know from one night to the next where I'm going to sleep. But that's not the issue. The issue is that regardless of what our circumstances are in life, regardless of how much money we make or we don't make, we're either feeling a sense of accountability and the connectedness to others, or we don't. And when this man, this mayor, thinking his name, said the time to cease and desist is now, I got goosebumps, and the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I said to myself, this is a man that gets it. I believe that the reason why he can say that and mean that sincerely is because obviously in the course of his growing up, he's learned accountability to the elders and the people in his life that he respected and that he honored by consistently trying to do the right thing, whether it's working in a grocery store. That's what I gather, is that he's had humble beginnings, and he's learned how to be a servant. He's learned how to serve. He's learned how to do these things that, you know, provide value to others around him and the family and the community and the company he works for, and we don't have enough of that.
Well, we
and
thank
I
you.
Just want to, if I parted right now, if I hung up and you never heard from me again, if you just got one thing from my message, it would be thank you. And this is a man that I would vote for governor. I'm not pathologically partisan. It's all about what you bring to the table. What are your intentions?
Well,
what
thank
do you know
you,
about
Brian.
Serving? What do you know about doing the right thing?
Thank you so much, Brian. And Mayor, we've got like 2 minutes left. It sounds like you're gaining
Kona,
fans.
Thank you so much. You know, I had good parents. You know, my mom always taught me to keep my feet on the ground, but my head in the clouds, and be a dreamer, to keep the earth below my feet, to be humble, have humility and compassion. And you know what? Here's a little factoid that Mayor Kim, your good mayor out in the Big Island, just identified. All four mayors in the state of Hawaii have roots on the Big Island. Mayor Caldwell he lived on the Big Island for a while. Mayor Victorino was born and raised on the Big Island. Of course, Mayor Kim is from the Big Island. And me, with my roots on Kauai, I was born on the Big Island and lived there during my preschool years. And so right now, all four mayors are from the Big Island. And we do it because this is Hawaii. We can lead the nation and the world by example. When you take a look at what the world should look like, it's right in our backyards. And we're blessed, and we never forget that. We never forget to count our blessings.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Again, we've just about run out of time here, but we would certainly like to underscore our appreciation for you carving out some time for us today. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact our talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.